this is a cool big party, man.
Yeah, I can dig it. Stop. Right on.
Good morning and welcome to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. How you doing, Connor?
I'm doing all right, Earl.
Yeah. It's going to be pretty decent today.
I'm excited.
Yeah, in the 60s.
Beautiful day outside.
Yeah. It's Mondays. That means Sundays with my co-host, Sandy Williams. Sandy, how you doing, man?
I'm doing all right. I'm not as excited about the weather as you seem to be, but it seems to be an okay day.
Are you 65 degrees?
It's going to be 65 today. It's 44 degrees
I know.
Right now.
Yeah, it's going to get up to be about 65 degrees.
Oh,
so,
hallelujah.
Yeah, that's something to be satisfied about for now. Let me ask you, Sandy. You and I were talking off the air. Did you watch any of the Packer game?
I did. It's like a tale of two halves. And then it still wasn't, I mean, we seem to be able to win by very small margins. Although you look around the whole league, all the games up until this weekend, about every game was being settled by 3 points or less.
Something has happened. There's been a change.
Well, there's far less offense.
Yes. And so you watch. The question is whether or not, you know, I think Aaron Rodgers probably had only thrown the ball 8 to 10 times in the first half.
Yeah.
Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, we didn't have the ball very many minutes.
Yeah, but still 8 to 10 times.
Right.
And there's clearly a change in the way the Packers.
Well, to be honest with you, I thought that his first half they were throwing the ball down the field quite a bit, and he was sort of lobbing these fades, and they were not very close. But I don't know whether that meant that the receiver wasn't looking over his outside shoulder. There was certainly the one pass to the rookie Christian Watson that was over the wrong shoulder, but maybe that wasn't the wrong shoulder. Maybe Watson should have been looking over the outside shoulder and wasn't. But I thought that he was quite on the money in the last quarter and in the overtime. He was throwing the ball like you would expect him to.
Well, clearly there's been it takes some time to get acquainted with a receiver and a quarterback.
It's interesting.
And this showed, right?
Yeah, they don't seem to know who to hype before. They had to hype Watson because he was chosen so high in the draft, but Romeo Dobbs seems to be the man of the hour in terms of being the focus of lots of passes.
Well, and you can kind of see, and I don't know, I guess nobody predicted, or people did predict, that it would be a difficult sledding without what was the guy's name?
Devontae
Adams. How can I forget him that quick?
Well, that's the way it is. Apparently, the league, he's more or less been forgotten everywhere.
Yeah.
He's not exactly thriving in his new environment.
I don't think the Packers, I mean, I'm sure they knew it would be a perilous journey without him. And you look at it, and they're going to run the ball. You know, that's what they're going to do for
Actually,
the most part.
I think the Packers are just fine. I think their defense is going to be really good. I think they've got to get their run defense tightened up a little bit. They've always had that problem. I think everyone in the league does, because I'm sure they're saying the same thing in Boston, that they have to tighten up their run defense because we got more yards on the ground than they did.
Yeah.
I think that what's happened is the league has changed a little bit. It's running has become more important to open up passing, and I think the reason for that is that defense has gotten much better. It's taken years to catch up, but I think the way they are defending against the pass, but mainly hiding the defenses they're going to run. I mean, I think the big deal is being able to mask a zone that looks like man-to-man or a man-to-man that looks like a zone, and those two things change a lot about how the quarterback's reads go, and it takes away a lot of the advantage the quarterback has.
So I don't think it's going to be as pass-happy a league as it's been. And you can see, the quarterbacks – taking the beatings. I didn't get a chance. We didn't get a chance to talk last week, and I wanted to talk about it, about the quarterback for the Miami Dolphins.
Yeah, too. And that was before he took the. The fact that they kept him in the game. That looked like a 1965 bell rung situation. Oh, Tua got his bell rung.
Yeah.
Stands up, stumbles, falls down, gets up. Goes off, has to be looked at in a tent to see whether he had a concussion. Everybody in the audience knew he had a concussion. Then he, like every gamer, says, no, it's my back. It's not my head. And they put him back in, but, you know, there's no denying what happened Thursday.
Well, that's the old Brett Favre.
Sure. It's the old everybody.
Yeah, but Brett Favre, most of the other guys, they couldn't. Brett Favre would just take that lick and then he'd be right back out there the next play. They'd take him out one play.
I think lots of quarterbacks. Troy Aikman talks about how he undoubtedly had a lot. I think people got lots of concussions that were little ones, you know?
Oh, yeah.
That you noticed that in the game Sunday, the Packer game, last name is Amos.
Right.
Took himself out of the game because he knew he...
Defensive back, yeah.
He knew
for the Packers.
He knew he'd been hit. He knew he... Because he wasn't passed out. He wasn't injured, manifestly. But he got up, pointed at his head, took himself out.
You know, I got to thinking about it last week when Tua got the concussed, was concussed for the second time. And I got to thinking about, man, as much as I love the game of football, and for 20 years running a youth football league and fighting people who said, you know, kids shouldn't be playing the sport. And now that I'm out of it,
mm-hmm.
I really had to think, do I really...
Well, I was coaching high school football for 5 years, and I got the same thought, and lots of parents. In fact, there are a fair number of NFL graduates who talk about the fact that they won't let their kids play football. I mean, a bunch of them raise their kids to play football, but there's a number of them say, no, I wouldn't let my kid do that. It's, you know, and the amount of CTE that's being seen around, you know, the people who've had terrible lifelong problems as a result of being, you know, concussed so many times. And, you know, the Medical College of Wisconsin here is a real center for concussion research, and they've been cooperating with football teams all around the state, maybe around the country, putting these sensors into high school helmets that sense the G-force of the contacts to get a sense of when people receive the kind of impact that would normally cause a concussion. And it's very frequent.
So I will tell you something about those helmets and their costs. Because I do remember before I left my league, that technology was just coming into play. And those helmets are about $600-$700 a piece.
Yeah.
And I know that in the league that we were in, we struggled to pay $125 for a helmet. But what I did, what always bothered me, and I think, and we need to clarify, a youth playing tackle football for a couple years, and a guy playing football from youth football to high school football to college football, to pro football, is a whole different ballgame.
Well, I think the NFL, having done a bunch of research on this, is very much promoting flag football and non-contact football for kids as far up advanced into high school as possible, because I think the data shows that young kids are just as likely to have concussions as older, and that it's better to cut down the repetitions of that until people get better at maybe... And there's another problem with youth football, which is the huge inequality of size of the kids the development of the kids.
You know, Sandy, and my pushback would always be, you know, you get concussions from soccer.
Yeah, oh, I want soccer.
From hockey.
Well, you know, soccer has stopped allowing heading by the youth players because heading the soccer ball
can cause
concussions. So they've taken steps to try and cut back.
But my thing was, so you'd say no to football, but hockey... It's just as physical a sport, And there's no...
Well, to be honest with you, I've watched hockey a lot. Well, there's checking, but there isn't much... There, in checks, not many people go to the ground and hit their head.
Right.
Right? There's checking, which is kind of vertical contact and maybe into the boards. I mean, there's no question. Hockey kids get concussions, but I don't think concussions are as frequent an issue in hockey.
So one of the things is, again, because I did this for so many years, concussions, you get hit around the jaw area, and that can cause concussion. It's not just the fact that when the head strikes the ground,
yeah,
if a guy checks you, or even if it's basketball, guys get concussions in basketball too. So, I mean, and again,
well, you can get concussions getting out of the bathtub.
Yeah.
But I mean, the question is, are you doing something that's going to substantially increase the risk of having a concussion? And are you doing something that'll substantially increase the risk that you will have multiple concussions? And that's really those are the issues that football has to contend with.
You know, I used to try to rationalize, because I was doing that, right, and having all these kids, and I'm trying to defend what we're doing and telling mothers, mm-hmm, that it's okay for little Jenny, you know, to play football. And I remember constantly saying, you know, the benefits from playing tackle football far outweigh, you know, the dangers. And you know, again, that's because I was running the league.
Well, no, I mean, I was just going to say there are lots of benefits, because, number one, I think when I talk to people my age and older people, they'll all look back at their high school football and say, that was the most fun I ever had.
No question.
So it's a great deal of fun for the participants. The participants do learn a variety of positive life lessons, a number of them. And so, you know, there's a lot of positives that are to be gained from youth football in particular. But, you know, football that takes you all the way through the NFL is a sort of a making a lifelong MMA. You know,
yes.
You've put your body through a lot of stuff. If you're 35 years old, you're playing professional football, particularly in one of the super contact positions,
right,
and you've been doing it for 25 years.
All right, listen, we got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. It's Monday. That means Mondays with Sandy Williams. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number as Mondays with Sandy Williams. You know, Sandy, I thought we would be remiss if we didn't talk about...
Well, we weren't done on football, because I wanted to just talk about Paul Chris for a minute.
Oh, yeah.
The firing of the UW, particularly a guy who, until this year, has had a very respectable record. Last year was probably disappointing because they started the year talking about being in the Final Four,
right,
and they didn't get anywhere close to that. So maybe they were beginning to disappoint last year. But he's a very upstanding guy. People have always kind of said this guy's a perfect representative of the UW program generally, because he's a very upright character, very much about the character of his players, etc. And then we get just a brief part into this season. It's clearly disappointing this season, and he's gone. So that shows you how much of a business, and the fact that his buyout is north of $16 million.
Well, I'll tell you this. You can lose to Ohio State,
yeah,
and that's acceptable.
Losing to Illinois, and particularly Bulema.
And they scored 30-some-odd points.
Yeah.
That was it. That was the fact that it's Illinois and Bulema.
Yeah.
That's That was it. That was the proverbial straw that broke the camel's back.
To be honest with you, I think the way that the whole structure has been set up, I suspect that, number one, Chris is a real stand-up guy.
Yeah.
And I think he and McIntosh are actually quite close, McIntosh being the athletic director, who incidentally went to high school here in Pewaukee.
Oh, okay.
Played football for Pewaukee. But I think that they almost do him a favor by firing him, because if he retires, he doesn't get the buyout. If he gets fired, he gets the buyout.
Right.
And the buyout is $16 million. So, you know, it's not like he actually ever has to go to work again. But I suspect he might.
Well, I mean, he loves football.
Yeah, yeah. His whole family is built around football, his father, brother.
So he'll wind up at some mid-level. He'll never get the major universe. I'm predicting this right now. He'll never get a major job again. There's only a handful of those, right?
Yeah, who knows? I mean, to be honest with you, he's the kind of guy, he might just decide to coach high school football at Madison West.
Yeah, I'm saying that. You know,
when I was in high school, interestingly, the basketball coach at the high school I went to was a guy named Jack Nagel. Jack Nagel had been the national coach of the year. He was the Marquette University coach in the early 50s, decided to quit, became a high school English teacher, taught English at my high school, and coached the high school basketball team. So it's not unheard of that decide to do something that's different.
Well, no, he'll breathe a sigh of relief because the stress that goes along with that, that job, and those kinds of jobs consume your entire life, right?
Oh, yeah. And you know, the job is so much about recruiting. And to some extent, recruiting, I'm sure, has become a very difficult,
competitive
program where, you know, they're giving offers to kids in eighth grade.
It's crazy.
So, yeah. You know, people who show lots of promise, like a kid who's big, lineman. There's a kid named Joe Brunner, who's went to Whitefish Bay High School, is a freshman now at Wisconsin. I believe he was getting offers from schools after his freshman year in high school. And so they're, you know, these kids and schools are paying so much attention to recruiting, and it makes so much difference. And clearly recruiting quarterbacks is kind of the name of the game for a school like Wisconsin, where these big college programs don't seem to have much trouble recruiting linemen, and defensive guys can be recruited. I think you have to go to Florida to get defensive backs
right.
For some reason.
Yeah. But
quarterbacks are not a dime a dozen. They're much rarer commodities. So, you know, we have this kid, Graham Mertz, and it turns out he's not as good as they thought he was.
Well, the first game or whatever it was, he threw five touchdown passes, Graham Mertz,
as a
freshman.
So Matt Flynn threw six for the
Packers.
I'm just saying, those things.
Happen. So right away, they projected he was going to be one of the greatest quarterbacks. I remember that well when he did that, and they predicted he was going to be one of the greatest quarterbacks in the history of the Badgers. He hasn't done basically anything diddly since.
Yeah,
and so his career is just about over, right? I remember when he threw those five touchdown passes, he was working out with the quarterback for the Kansas City Chiefs. That's how, you know, they looked at him and thought he was really going to be a guy who made it. But, you know, you get hit the wrong couple times the wrong way, and those guys will put some fear in you, right?
Well, I don't know. I wouldn't allege that it was necessarily fear. I just think the game is really complicated, and it has much more to do with the ability to use your eyes and brain while you're playing to look at the reads and figure out where to throw. And so, we were talking about how it's become more of a defensive game. Scoring's down in the NFL. That's why. I mean, the defenses have gotten much more sophisticated.
Well, did you see the poor soul that New England had to put out there on the field, sacrificial lamb?
Yeah.
And you know, to his credit,
that was all they had left. They went to overtime with him.
I know.
So.
That's my point.
Oh, gosh.
That's all they had left.
Yeah.
Right? And the guy is a pro football player, right? I mean, but clearly.
What's his name again?
I I don't know what the guy's name was.
I think it was Zappi.
Yes.
He was one of the few quarterbacks I've ever seen his name starts with a Z. That's how far down the court they went from A. They had looked, and Belichick is looking. Who we got under A? Who we got under B? They got all the way to Z.
That, and I think about it, there was one guy who played for Seattle many years ago.
With a Z?
Yeah, with a Z. Got to go to a break. 844-967. Turned out to be a pretty decent quarterback.
We can remember him, too.
Yeah.
Zorro. Yeah. His name Zorro?
No, Zorro. It was. We'll find out.
Yeah.
844-967-2789. We'll be back. Show as always. You can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Monday. That means Mondays with Sandy Williams and Connor. Let's bring whoever that is up on the line quickly. Don't worry about screening them. Apparently, they won't talk about football. Who do we have on the line?
Hey, good morning, Sandy.
Ooh, are you going to remember Jim Zorin? Is that what you're?
Yes, and Steve Largent was the receiver Largent back then.
Yeah, but Largent doesn't start with a Z.
No. But I'm saying, but that was a great combination. I mean, yeah. they really. Go ahead.
As I was telling Earl.
What's his name?
That was back in the days of the Z-Hawks.
I have to be honest. I mean, as a kid, you know, I was not born, you know, during when Lombardi was coaching the Packers.
No kidding.
I obviously, though, I did see
high school football then.
I did see, though, I mean, when the Packers back in the early 80s, if they had an 8-8 season, that was considered successful. And I do remember, Lynn Dickey, I remember the Lynn Dickey days as well.
Lynn Dickey was a decent quarterback.
He was great, but he was always broken. The guy had more broken bones than I can think of.
Yeah, he couldn't get out of the way.
Right. But, you know, at the end of the day, you know, the players are certainly a lot different today than they were back then. Back then, if you remember, it's got to be at least 15 years now, when Chuck Cecil was like a human missile on that field.
Yeah.
He would just literally just cream people, just everything. I mean, he just laid out, bang, and that was the end of the player.
Well, let me tell you how different it was back in the 60s. A guy like Willie Davis, All-Pro, Hall of Famer, mm-hmm. was a defensive tackle. He weighed 240 pounds. The offensive linemen were about 240. I mean, these weren't the behemoths that you see now. They weren't great athletes. They didn't pick guys because they could run a 4.6.
Well, I think guys were great athletes, but they were more diversified, and they weren't as specialized.
Well,
they played, you know, I mean,
Sandy, they could
multiple positions.
You've got the offensive linemen and defensive tackles now at 290. They're chiseled, and they can run a 4.7 40.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, Willie
like
Davis.
Like a line attack.
Yeah, Willie Davis in the best years of his life probably ran a 5.0 flat. So these guys weren't so fast, and the other part of it too, Sandy, is I don't think that they had year-round nutrition training and all the people around them.
They didn't even have season long.
I know. Yeah, they worked the job.
Yeah.
But let me ask you, Earl. I never got to see him in person, but I mean, everyone talks about like Walter Payton, Barry Sanders. You know, I got to see that, but I was going to say Gale Sayre. I heard he was just Mr. Smooth. He was unbelievably quick.
Gale Sayre was, after all of these different eras, and you look at all the greatest backs ever, Gale Sayre is the one, along with Jim Brown. Who today?
Well, Barry Bonds too, but
Barry Sanders.
Barry Sanders. Yeah. Yeah.
Barry Sanders.
Those three could play today. Their talents were.
I think the difference is that because of all this extreme training and extreme capability and high speed, that's why the offensive backs aren't lasting as long, as they're absorbing hits that are far more extensive in terms of the damage done.
Well, runaway trucks. What's on the other side of the line?
Linebackers today could all play fullback.
They could.
In terms of their athleticism.
And look at like a guy like AJ Dillon that you got to tackle is running into. His thighs are like the size of tree trunks.
But you know what?
I mean, that guy is huge.
But you know what? If he's a battering ram, he won't last long. I don't care how big and strong he is. There used to be a guy named Christian Okoye who played for the Kansas City Chiefs. You remember him, Sandy?
Oh, sure. He was actually from Nigeria.
Yeah, he was. They call him the Nigerian Nightmare.
Yeah.
I think he lasted about 5 or 6 years.
Well, and we had John Brockington.
John Brockington, who lasted maybe 4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, these guys that are battering rams, Larry Zonka and those kind of guys, they were battering rams, and so they could, that's what they used to do. Jim Taylor was a battering ram.
Well, you could, you know, if you're a big, strong guy, you can run through people who weigh 265 pounds playing defensive line. But today,
I know.
You know, look at who's our number 97 is. Clark.
Yeah.
Kenny Clark.
You see the arms on that guy?
Well, but Kenny Clark weighs 300 pounds.
Yeah.
He's fast as lightning.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you're not going to have Jim Taylor would not run through.
No.
You know, and neither with Jim Brown. So, you know, the game is different because the relative scale of the backs as compared, and the relative athleticism of the backs compared to the defenders has changed dramatically.
But here's what else we should think, Dan Sandy. As it looks like we're going back to giving the running backs the ball more. Because we saw that in the game with the Packers. It means they're going to have to start paying running backs more money.
Look at what the Patriots did in that drive.
Well,
I mean, they brought the extra guys. They just mauled us. I mean, they just rammed it down our throat that entire drive.
Well, it's easier for an offensive lineman to run block than it is for him to defend.
Well, and plus the fact if you're rushing the passer, you get more upright. You're using your arms. You're swimming. You're doing all these things that put you in a position that's vulnerable to run blocking.
So right.
If what you're thinking is you're rushing the passer, the defender is going to become vulnerable to the run, and that's what's happening. That's what the whole conversion is. How do we solve for that?
Right. And so, you know, the game is evolving again. If based on what Sandy you were talking about earlier and the scores being lower, you know, don't forget Kansas City and the Rams, it was video games. They were putting up 50, 60 points a year or two ago.
Well, actually, one of the games yesterday scored 100 points total between them.
Yeah,
so it does happen.
That was the Detroit Lions, and I forgot who else. But Detroit is now an offensive juggernaut, but no defense. But okay, Dave. Hey,
thank you
very much for the call. Really appreciate it. But I wanted to do this
before we
move forward. Darnell Brooks's trial begins today, and hopefully it's the beginning of what we believe will be justice, and that happens, and that we and the families that were impacted and affected by it are able to get beyond, and this community which was impacted and affected by it will get beyond that. It's taken a while, and I don't know, Sandy, was that last year?
Mm-hmm.
Wow, it doesn't seem...
Well, you know, the wheels of justice do move slowly. One of the prices to pay for a country where you are innocent until proven guilty, and then there are all this legal apparatus that protects citizens against being oppressed by the government, that same legal apparatus, you know, defends criminals from having to immediately have their crimes punished and penalties meted out. So it does create this problem when there's, for instance, a situation in which somebody has committed a crime openly and publicly, is arrested, and everyone knows who it is, and so then it takes all this time to have the wheels of justice completed. So it's a problem, but I think it's a problem that we have to have in America.
But that's what separates our government and our laws than any other nation on earth.
Well,
right?
Not any other nation. That would be American exceptionalism in terms of being wrong. There's plenty of other countries that have the same kind of processes.
Right.
But it is what separates us from something that's altogether autocratic and oppressive.
Yeah. So anyway, it's not new information to those who live in this city. But anyway, I'm sure people will be watching it. It'll be available for everybody to see. Anyway, Sandy, let's go to a conversation that you and I... let's go there. Let me do this. Let's go here first, and then we'll go there.
Here and there.
Yeah.
That's what you can call this show, Connor, when you put it in the line. You can post it. You can say, Sandy and Earl go from here to there.
Sandy, my mind has just been running crazy with the stuff with Ukraine and Zelensky and the things he's saying and
the annexation,
you know,
and
and the fact that he now wants for, you know, NATO to hurry up and say, yes, we're going to bring you guys in, Ukraine in immediately, which then will force the NATO nations to now come in. What are your thoughts? Because I think, Sandy, you know, it would be crazy for NATO, and it may anger some people that I'm saying this, to do something they've never done before, bring in a nation that's at war.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden we say, well, yeah, okay, well that means all the rest of us would have to be at war.
I think it would be crazy. And the whole situation is, when you stand back and look at it, first of all, the table is now being set for an environment in which negotiation will be very, very difficult. Zelensky's saying that he won't negotiate.
Yes.
over land that's been taken from the Ukraine. The annexation makes it almost impossible for Russia to yield on the land that's been annexed to Russia under some, maybe, if some would say, a bogus international process, but it's a process that Russia would say is not bogus, and so it's getting to be a tougher and tougher situation for negotiation, which means that if NATO got involved, you know, Russia would be left with no alternative. If NATO troops are deployed, we'd end up with war in Lithuania and Latvia and Estonia and, you know, all sorts of places that are also NATO countries, because what's to lose now for Russia if NATO is already implicated? And we hadn't, and NATO had not decided to bring them in,
right,
prior to the threat, because they had not yet determined that its interests were vital to the interests of all the rest of the NATO nations. So, you know, I just fear that we've set up the table for this process where some would say the process of the West goaded Russia into the invasion of Ukraine, and then instead of setting the table for a negotiation that could settle the situation in Ukraine, the parties are getting closer and closer to having a table set that can't be negotiated.
That's a hell of an assessment, but an accurate one. I was watching Zelensky's wife on yesterday, and she was saying, well, it's too late for negotiations. Well, you can say that.
Well, a war like this has to end with negotiation. There's no end to a war that isn't negotiated. There isn't. I don't think there's been a single war that didn't end with an armistice of some kind.
Yeah, but
it was a negotiation.
She's having this conversation, you know, and there are American citizens who I'm sure agree with her. And because they're looking at her and feeling sorry, but they don't understand the magnitude of what we're talking about. We got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. The phone line's open. It's Monday. Mondays with Sandy Williams. We'll be right back. The Earl Ingram Show, as always. You can join us at 844-967-2789. 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Monday. That means Mondays with my co-host Sandy Williams. And we're talking about the latest developments in Ukraine. And I was saying to Sandy during the break, you know, you wonder, you keep pushing Putin and pushing us back against the wall more and more and more. And I don't want anybody to misunderstand what I'm saying, Sandy. I'm not speaking from the perspective of somebody who supports, you know, Russia. I'm speaking from the perspective of somebody who sees a bigger picture and the inherent danger that this is creating that many of us, I think, Sandy, may believe could never happen.
Well, you know, here's the deal. You know, first of all, the bluster on both sides of not talking is something that typically goes on before negotiations start, because you can't say, oh, I want to negotiate, because that means you're willing to give up stuff. So you've got to, and Putin is in the position of, his hand looks weak right now because he's beginning to lose on the battlefield in some places. And he's saying, yeah, I might be losing today, but wait till you see the cards I'm going to deal here. I'm going to call up a lot of troops. I'm going to broaden this assault. He keeps talking in all sorts of ways about all the different kinds of pressure he can apply, including nuclear. And so now the West is looking at this, and it's clear that the West, to some extent, is licking their chops, because they think Putin will put so much into this war, and he will create such instability at home. The call-up is obviously causing some political reaction and backlash in Russia. A bunch of young men are leaving Russia in fear of being called up into this war that looks like a deadly war for participants. And so, you know, then the West is sort of licking its chops, like, well, maybe what'll happen here is Putin's going to lose political power. Well, if you start losing political power in an autocracy like Putin has, what you're beginning to create is something that looks like a vacuum. Okay, and first of all, the person who's holding on to that power, Putin, is not to be expected to just give it up.
Right.
So he's going to begin to act in manners that some would describe as desperate ways to hold on to the power. He might exercise it by being more autocratic inside his country. That has some backlash. He might exercise it by trying to demonstrate more might and power internationally with respect to military reaction. Everyone has always known that nuclear weapons are more likely to be used in a situation in which there is political instability and political vacuum. So what we're talking about sort of enthusiastically is maybe we're going to create political instability and a vacuum in Russia, which incidentally is probably not a very good idea.
No,
what we're worried about is nuclear weapons or rational conduct by our opponent, because the Cold War was always premised on the fact that the two countries were acting rationally. okay? And rational conduct was the basis for detente. No one's going to push the button because the button is the end of the game.
Right.
And I don't think anyone thinks Putin's going to push the button in terms of sending missiles a long way over to the United States and blowing things up. But he might well use nuclear weapons in a manner that would force NATO to make some hard choices about whether they wanted to put boots on the ground in Russia and get involved in a battle in which, at that point, I suspect that that the conscript of people in Russia would be done, and there would be some enthusiasm amongst the people, because what he has been building in Russia is a concern that NATO is there to tear Russia apart. And if they get into a war with NATO, then that's altogether coming true.
But Sandy, getting into a war with NATO is basically getting into a war with the United States. NATO, I mean, come
yes,
on.
Yes, but so far, I mean, what's happening now and what Russia's military experts and what military experts outside of this are saying is that basically Putin is now fighting a war against NATO equipment that is manned by by Ukrainians. Okay, so it's in some respects a war against NATO that is in which the proxy fighters are all Ukrainian.
But if you look
and there are plenty of Ukrainians to man this army in this finite war region. So the fact is that Ukraine can call up plenty of military. There's a finite number of military that you could stuff into Ukraine to fight this war. And, you know, if you put in too many in some places, they might get surrounded like they did in Lyman. And, you know, there are 5,000, apparently 5,000 Russians were surrounded and cut off, or the number that's being reported is 5,000.
But Sandy, when we talk about NATO and we look at the scale of who the real power is in NATO, there's no mistaking who that is. If you took the United States government and its military might and power out of NATO,
right?
Come on,
absolutely.
You would have, so that's the part I think, Sandy, that troubles me.
Okay, but and everyone in NATO and Zelensky recognizes that too.
So right.
The tea leaves that Zelensky's reading with respect to whether he's going to negotiate with Russia or not are the tea leaves that he's receiving in messages from the United States about how willing we are to stand behind him and how much weapons what sort of weapons, what volume of weapons we're willing to provide to him today, tomorrow, and into the future in this war, because the card that Putin has to play and has always had to play is, look, we are an overwhelming military force. We've only just started to commit what we could potentially commit to this war. And so, you know, the card he's playing in terms of even the subliminal messages to one another about negotiation is, hey, we're in this for the long haul, and you better understand the price you're going to have to pay in the long term if you want to fight Russia over the long term. And the fact that Ukraine is having these battlefield victories in the short term is, from many military experts look at this and say, look, if Putin is in it for the long haul, and if he can sustain the Russian power over the Russian process and military, then what he says is true. You know, the price that will be paid will be a huge price.
So the pipelines that were blown up,
under the pipelines.
Yeah. So, that's part of...
Well, and what's interesting, the mystery is, you know, Russia is saying we blew it up. It is true that Biden, for some reason, in a speech months ago, said that if all of this happened, that we would terminate that pipeline, and don't worry, we know how to do that. So that did sound like a threat associated with destruction, but it doesn't. It's kind of incomprehensible why we would do it today in terms of what the interests of everyone are, because it damages the energy potential interest of Europe.
Sandy, the only point that I'm trying to make is we better understand the magnitude of what's happening here.
Oh yeah, I mean
I just don't think we are.
There's a gas pipeline that's running under Ukraine that continues to pass gas.
Yeah. Listen, wow, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
Especially for a Monday morning.
Yeah.
Gotta go to a break. Sandy's on the top of his game. 844-967-2789. We'll be back.